This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level, Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a crispy and crunchy buttered popcorn degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working? Shane and Randy and Phil, who's not actually on Fiend Phone right now, but might be back shortly. Can you feel it?
I feel it.
Yes, Lou, it's good to be here, and I'm feeling it all over. It's great. Great to be back.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've spoken.
I think I haven't been on with you for a month, Lou, and I was missing my Lou fix.
Yeah.
You know, it's been more than a month because since that time I was on 1 week with James, and then you weren't on the last time I was on. So yeah, I just had to get on and make sure you were okay. I hadn't been in touch with you. I didn't know if you'd been contacted by the state. Have you been contacted by the state in any way?
Yes, recently? The IRS.
I knew it. I was gone too long.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
But anyway.
Yeah, it's been a couple months. So.
You know, it's been a bit.
I was just thinking about this. Michael and I were talking the other day and exchanging emails and stuff. And you and I, we're kind of like the old-time veterans here, Randy.
Well, you know, anyone who was there at the Liberty Fest, which is coming up. I'm sure you're talking about it every episode now you're on, right?
But oh, yeah, it gets mentioned on occasion.
We did the live broadcast from the one in 2014 or 15?
I want to say 15.
Yeah, okay. And
it could be 14, though.
That's been a while.
You know what? I think it was 2014.
Yeah, you were there. I was there. Yeah, Diana was there.
Yeah, that was the year that I started the Fiends. So, went to Pork Fest, did that. You didn't make it to that one.
Yeah.
And then you came to Liberty Fest, and I think that was your first real big-time Liberty Festival type deal.
Yeah, I think it was. There was one before that I didn't make it to, the first. I don't know if it was the first annual, but it was the first one. But by the next, by the time I came, it was the second annual. And now we're up to the fourth.
The fifth. The
first one.
The fifth. Yeah. Okay. See, wow. Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, the first one was held at a state forest group campground, I guess would be the best way to describe it. So it wasn't at Circle Pines yet. We did that the second year, moved out there to the other side of the state. Because the first one was over in the, not too far from Detroit. But yeah, it was a darn good time. And you're going to be making it to this one coming up, right?
I'm going to make it. I'm glad it's closer to the middle of the state because I'm already driving 9 hours as it is. So
yeah,
it's nice to not have it quite as far to go. But I'm going to make it no matter what here unless I don't. But I have my plans. I've got my ticket.
Yeah, and Shane, you're going to be there too.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
There's going to be quite a few Fiends there.
There's going to be a handful, yeah.
Yeah, because so, isn't Nick coming? Our young capitalist, yakitalist from the West Coast.
Yeah, but Nick is a tired old yak codger. So he's taking some time
yak
off
years.
Of the Fiends. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, he's too busy doing his manual labor because he's a high school dropout. So because he doesn't have a proper education, he has to tend wild beasts and muck out stalls and take the big giant pooper scooper because he just didn't want to finish high school.
Because he listened to the advice of his elders at the Freedom Fiends or something? What was that?
No, it was his idea. It was his
idea. I'm still looking forward to seeing Nick.
I tease Nick. He's a good kid. I'm very proud of him. It's not that he's doing manual labor and mucking out stalls. He's his own boss. He's an entrepreneur. He's raising yaks and other critters to butcher for meat. So
Yeah, he's actually quite accomplished. So I give him grief because he's a little sissy married and he can't stay up late. You know, like the rest of us that are three times his age, stay up until 1 and 2 in the morning and then go to work the next day and still function. I mean, he just can't handle it. Maybe he's not taking chewables.
If you raise animals, don't you have to get up real early in the morning? Aren't the roosters crowing and stuff like that?
I don't even know if he has roosters.
Well, he's on the west. He's on the west coast. The show is over at midnight. You're right. You'd have to be a wuss if you couldn't have that. What can I say? Okay, well, never mind. That's all right. I am too. I'm never on the show when I've got something early in the morning. I'm kind of a crybaby that way too.
Yeah, but you actually are old.
Yeah, that's right.
Shots fired.
That was kind of left-handed, wasn't it?
I'm so old that I don't even mind. AARP's been sending me literature for 15 years. So, yeah. And when the Social Security Administration starts sending you the stuff, then you're officially old. So old you don't even care. So it's all right. I will even be retiring in the near future from my labors, my day job.
Randy's so old he bleeds dust. But anyway, so back to Liberty Fest. Shane, last year was your first time getting out there. Tell us about your experience, and was it your first big Liberty get-together festival, camping, outing type stuff?
It was my first Liberty get-together of any kind. So I had been an anarchist for a couple years, but I hadn't really met any other anarchists that I knew online. And so that was the first time that I got to meet all these people that I knew online and hang out with them and get to know them better. And it was really awesome. There were so many people there, and I'm looking forward to seeing all those people and more again this year.
And how far did you have to drive?
Well, I had to drive 5 hours from Cincinnati, but I'm originally from a town called Fort Wayne, which is only a couple hours from there.
Ah, Cincinnati. That's where you've got that great Cincinnati chili, if I remember.
Oh, yes. Cincinnati chili is famous.
Scalini? Is that what the Italians claim? You pronounce it that way?
I have no idea.
Oh, no. Skyline. That was it.
Okay. Oh, Skyline. Yeah. We have a chain down here called Skyline, and they make really good chili.
Yes. I knew an Italian chef who insisted it was pronounced Scalini, so.
Well, maybe I should start calling it that.
I think they put cinnamon in it or something.
I'm not sure, but it's really good.
I used to live down in Lexington, Kentucky for a while, and I'd get up to Cincinnati a lot. So, yeah. Well, that's not too bad. I'm wondering, anyway, I'm really looking forward to it. I love meeting all the people that are there. After a year goes by, I'm starting to miss them.
How far of a drive is it for you, Randy?
Oh, it's mid-Missouri, so it's over 9 hours to get up there.
Oh, wow.
And almost that long to get back.
Wow.
You save an hour with the time zone.
Yeah, that's true. That's really true. And I keep refining my trip on the map. And each year I steer further to the east and south of Chicago. And last year I almost had it perfected. I didn't have to come anywhere near that town. And this year I'm going to definitely stay away. I don't know. It doesn't matter what time you go through. You're going to be stuck in a traffic jam because the roads are just all ripped up everywhere. How can the roads just be ripped up everywhere all the time?
You know, I've been to Jeff City a couple of times. I went out there to visit some friends a number of years ago back in the 90s. And the route that I took... I can't remember the highway number, but I took I-69 from Michigan down to Indianapolis and did the...
You cheated. You didn't go anywhere. You didn't even have to go around Chicago. It wasn't anywhere in your way.
Right. Yeah. And it was pretty reasonable time for me to go through there. Indianapolis is nowhere near as bad as Chicago.
Oh, no.
I don't know if that's too far out of your way.
Well, if you're coming from Detroit, that would be okay to come. But when you're over on the eastern side of Michigan, it's harder to avoid Chicago. And for everybody in Chicago, I don't mean to be insulting and everything, but I can't stand it. You know, when you're not in a city all the time, and you get away and you get kind of out in the country and you're only in smaller towns, you just get so spoiled so fast. You know, as soon as you drive back into the city after like a year or so, you're going, there's nothing but maniacs here. And yeah. I know it's me. It's, you know, but because when it's I lived too. In the city, I got used to it. But darn it, you know, there's certain nice things about being in the city and certain nice things about being in the country. And that's one of them.
I agree, Randy.
It's me too.
Yeah, me too.
It's me too.
I actually spent an hour and a half in traffic today.
Yeah, well, bless you.
Thanks.
And your pointed little head. I'm sorry.
So,
well, anyway, but
my trip is probably about as long as yours is, Randy, if not a little bit longer. And I'm in Michigan.
But you're kind of in Michigan, but kind of not, right?
He's in Bear Saskatchewan.
He's in the Upper Peninsula. Or is that it? You don't say that there, do you? You say something like the UP, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if I said that, you'd know I wasn't from there.
Well, if you said the UP?
Yeah. No, or if Bears. If I said Upper Peninsula.
That's common terminology. UP is common terminology. When referring to people up here, Uper is common terminology. So, yeah.
Upers. If you're not from there, though, whenever you see UP, you say up first, and then you go, oh, no, that's wrong. That means UP. It doesn't mean up. But it also means up, kind of, because it's up on the map. So
Some people think either way. Thinks that's what it is.
Yeah. I've thought that sometimes, but I feel more of an obligation to keep it straight when I'm rubbing shoulders with all the Michiganders. Is that what you call?
Yeah,
call them like up there when I'm up there at the fest. So
meow.
I want to get it right.
All right, we'll be back after this trip to Market. Shane, when we get back, I want you to tell us what it was like to find out that these people are actually real and not just figments of your imagination.
Worms. All right, worms.
Yes.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to present the 5th Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan, just outside of Kalamazoo, starting Thursday, June 22nd, and going through Monday, June 26th. That's right, Liberty Fest is getting longer and stronger. There will be presentations, discussions, bacon duels, and outdoor activities in an environment that is both family and grown-up friendly. There will be special appearances by Jeffrey Tucker, Dana Martin, and a few of the Freedom Fiends. If you have only talked about what a free society would look like, this is your chance to live it and see it with your own eyes. Now round up your friends and family and get them registered today at mplfest.org. And there's a discount for paying with Bitcoin. That's mplfest.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
This cat.
Yeah.
Freedom Fiends, this is Lou. I'm joined by Randy and Shane.
Hi.
We're back. Randy, we're the old-time vets, and Shane's like the new guy. Our job is to get him ready to go off to radio show boot camp, where he will learn to field strip a microphone in like 30 seconds. Field strip and put back together.
I thought my job was to, let him do the work, let him talk, and we'll just listen and then say something clever when it comes to us.
Well, that too. But I mean, when he goes to boot camp, he's gonna, Michael's gonna be the drill instructor. He's gonna yell and cough at him and make sure he can field strip that microphone. And then
don't feel bad if he calls you a maggot. Don't take it personally.
Well, it's for a good cause. I want to be able to carry that liberty flame of truth into the future.
Yeah, well, you got to be in good shape for that,
right? So, yeah.
So anyway, Liberty Fest. Talk about your experience.
I got to meet Lou and Randy last year and Jeremy and Diana and a bunch of other people that I used to only know online. And when I got to meet all these people in person, it kind of was a revelation to me, because I was like, wow, these people really aren't feds. They're not sock accounts. You know, they're actually people with personalities and party favors and whatnot. And we got to sit around the campfire and trade stories and have a good time all around. It was really fun to meet all you guys, and I'm looking forward to doing it again.
Yeah, well, this will be your first time meeting Nick, so that should be pretty interesting.
Yeah,
he's not riding out on Yak Back, though.
I was really disappointed that he wasn't there last year, but I'm looking forward to even seeing Nick again this year and hanging out with him and anybody else who wants to show up.
Well, speaking of former fiends, or I'm not, is Shane Radliff, is he not co-hosting at the moment?
No, he's busy with his other projects.
Yeah, he's got other projects, but he was there last year, and I think he's going to be there again.
Yep, I also met him last year.
Matter of fact, I think I will be doing another interview with him possibly on Wednesday night, because some of us are getting there a little bit early to do the setup. So we'll do like a live streaming, you know, talking about what's going to be happening at the fest and meet some of the people that are helping set up and, you know, the organizers.
But to hear the stream, you'd need to listen to his show, though, his live show on Wednesday night.
Yeah, probably, I guess.
And what Wednesday night would that be anyway?
That's going to be the 21st. Because the dates for Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, see, that's a good segue there, Randy. you see how Randy put the bait on the hook and I just gobbled it up there, Shane?
Yeah, I'm taking notes.
The dates for he's just an old pro. I mean, Randy's been doing this since the days of the Telegraph, so I mean, good for him. But anyway, the dates are Thursday, June 22nd, so it starts Thursday morning, June 22nd, and it will go through Monday, June 26th. So on Monday, we'll have the breakdown, and I'll be doing the breakfast for everybody that's still there. So I have a, what is it? I think I have a 12-quart cast iron Dutch oven for cooking up the hash browns.
Say, Lou, on the registration site, and no, that wasn't a cue for you to give the URL for the site.
You mean
You
mean mplfest.org?
That's right. That's where you go. Well, either there or maybe there's a Facebook page for the fest also. But somebody put up a calendar. That's like in charge of the calendar. I don't know, scheduling speakers and that.
That would be Joe Motard.
Did I see Jeffrey Tucker on there as one of the speakers?
Yes, you did.
That's right.
I believe Jeffrey. I think it's Saturday that Tucker's speaking.
Yeah, I think at 4:00 on Saturday. He is always just super entertaining.
Yeah, he's great.
He is. Now, I want to know if he's going to wear
the
suit and the bow tie.
Yeah.
When he spoke at Pork Fest when I was there, he did, and that's a camp out, but it's not near as rustic as the Circle Pine Center.
Yeah. Right.
So I wonder if we'll still get the whole treatment. I bet we do.
I'm pretty sure that we will. I personally want to see him in like a old torn up wife beater with spaghetti sauce stains on the front.
I'll have my camera there.
Yeah. Bloodshot eyes, and I just looking as non Jeffrey Tucker as he can.
We'll see.
And maybe wearing a Bad Audio as a Hate Crime T-shirt. So, all right, we'll be back.
We will.
Meow.
Worms.
Meow. Meow.
Meow. Meow. Meow.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists who think you need a government permission slip for everything? Everything you do is an A to B conversation, and the government should see their way out of it. Create true free markets by adopting the BIPCOT No Government License. The BIFCOT NoGov license allows use or modification of any product, service, or software except by governments or government agents. Go to BIFCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Seconds to read that article and get up to speed, Shane.
No pressure, though. None at all.
Yeah. So we tried bringing Phil back in during the break, and Shane got droned. So Phil's going to chill out for a little bit. And maybe we'll bring him back in the second half if he's still awake. But anyway, so... Randy, you got something that you found interesting. You read an article that I suggested but didn't read myself.
So. Is that why you were wanting me to tell you what I thought you were just testing me, but you really wanted to know what was in it.
I've had a super busy day, so I.
No, this is really kind of interesting. This is an article from Wired magazine, which is called "A Curious Plan to Save the Environment with the Blockchain," and I'm not quite sure. I think I did read a few things in it talking about how it might save the environment, but they were mainly talking about how you could track just about anything using the blockchain. And it sounded like if you had a blockchain for, say, seafood, you could a fish would come out of the water and would apparently get entered onto the blockchain, you know, somewhere out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, I guess. And then it would sort of get tracked all the way along the way so that you could scan the fish into your phone at the store and see everything that was done, and maybe get the GPS coordinates of where it was caught and when. And it was really wild the things that it could that it could track. And they talked about doing.
Is this going to be like some genetically modified fish where when the fry hatch, they'll all start developing QR codes as they grow up? That'll be part of their maturity.
And now, I wasn't sure how they were going to do
that. But they'll also grow a QR code.
I am assuming once you caught one, you would have to somehow tag it. I guess you could do that. I mean, they could stick it on there. But they were talking about tracking products, you know, just about any kind that you know, you could come up with. And there's a country, I think the country of Georgia, if they talked about that, that has started tracking land titles. And this is a really good idea if you homesteaded a piece of property, you could get entered into the land blockchain. Or if you bought one, you know, the transfer would be entered into the blockchain. They actually said there were some countries, and I don't know which countries, it didn't say, but the article did say that many countries, you know, promise, you know, they'll track it, and even the government always runs the titles, right? I mean, even in my county, probably your county, the recorder's office it keeps track of who owns every piece of property in it. But the trouble is that governments in some places, believe it or not, are not reliable about this and have been known to lose or change land registry records to say, oh, this is our land. You don't own that.
We just found oil on this land. You're trespassing. Get off our property. That's what the government says.
And this has been done, and there was a Forbes magazine article about how the Republic of Georgia was actually using a blockchain. There was some California maybe company called Bitfury, I think it was, which was a West Coast startup. I'm not sure it was California, but they had set up a blockchain for the land in the Republic of Georgia, and it would, you know, it's the thing that's so good about the blockchain. Of course, the one thing that makes it not quite as anonymous as it could be you know, as Ross Ulbricht, you know, knows, because they put him in prison forever for the Silk Road thing. But the blockchain's totally public, and you can't get in and it can't corrupt it, because there's always 10,000 people looking over your shoulder. And that would be a really good way to establish land records, rather than having some jerkfish office holder down in your county courthouse who's responsible for making sure nobody screws up and loses the record of who owns the place where your house is sitting right now. So it's kind of an attractive idea. They were saying that some problems that they're trying to work out, not just this Georgia thing, but the whole technology, the whole blockchain, is that, you know, people still have problems with, say, losing their private keys and that sort of thing. But I'm not sure. You know, the private key is just another name for you. I mean, you've got your name, and then you have this long string of numbers, and that's yours too. So I'm thinking in something that is a public blockchain, where everything about it is meant to be public, you might that might not be a problem. You know, you could have some way, easier way to associate it, where if you lost your private key, you might not just lose your house at the same time.
Well, you won't necessarily lose your house because of the transaction being recorded on the blockchain, being the public ledger. But what would happen is, for whatever records that you keep, I don't think you would be able to access them without your private key.
Yeah, and you know, this was not in the article, but one thing I've always wondered about the blockchain and using it to track different things other than just using it as a cryptocurrency, you know, for tracking information. Like, you remember with the Bitcoin, you know, there was some hope early on that that would be used as an unbreakable domain name.
No, that wasn't
server
Bitcoin.
That could not be shut down by associating.
That was .bit.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, there was some hope that Bitcoin could get to that point, even though it never happened.
Well, it wasn't Bitcoin, it was Namecoin.
Oh, I remember that one from a few years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Or are you saying that when Michael came
up
with Bitcoin,
you're right.
That was the
that's what that was. That when I'm sorry.
Are you there?
There's when you have people who... Can you hear me?
You're buffering pretty hard.
I hope I'm not.
You're still here.
Yes, go ahead. Continue talking, Randy.
Okay. Well, let me try and do that. If you lose me, pick up after me or something like that. But the one thing that I wondered about is that there's you know, people wonder what life would be like in, you know, without the government, and a lot of people think that you couldn't have corporations is one thing that some people think would go away because you don't have governments there to certify corporations or register them, and that you would get rid of what you call personal liability, which that's one advantage that shareholders have with a corporation, is that they can't be personally sued if somebody needs to sue the company for damages or something like that. And I was thinking, if you used a blockchain to register shares of your in a company, and there was no name associated with it, no one could ever know who the shareholders were, so that whether there was a government to give personal immunity or not, you could never sue a shareholder because you could never find out their name. It might be another use that you would have of blockchain chain technology. But like I said, they're using it apparently already in Georgia, and the article, the thing about saving the environment, it was a little bit thin, I guess. The idea that be a you know, something, you got to have a name when you name your article, right? When you're in Wired magazine, they probably won't publish one. But you have to read the whole thing to figure it out. But anyway, that was the article, Lou, and I appreciate you sending it to me because I learned a few things in it.
Yeah, I scanned through it myself, and I saw what you're talking about with the fish. And I'm pretty sure that they're going to be tracking the shipments of the fish rather than putting a QR code right on the fish.
Right. But it sounds more like a Carfax.
So you might have a box of fish and track that all the way. Well, that would make sense.
But I do have some news that we can use, because you mentioned people losing their private keys and everything. There was an episode not too long ago where we're talking about a listener, and Michael is trying to hold his hand as his life savings in Bitcoin got jacked. And I think at the time it was around $70,000. Now it would probably be, wow, it would probably be worth $250,000, something like that. But anyway, I recently had an incident. My phone just absolutely completely died on me. Yesterday. I was playing around on there. I was typing a sarcastic remark on Facebook, and at first I thought that Facebook was punishing me for being nasty. But anyway,
seems reasonable.
Yeah, wind the phone, and it just, the screen went black and it died. I was pushing, well, it's not really buttons, but I couldn't get to do anything, so I just completely died. So I popped the battery off, and I'm like, holy crap, I hope this thing didn't go down for the count. Well, the whole thing is, I got my Bitcoin wallet on there. So,
Yeah,
it with Bitcoin being worth quite a bit now, and it's amazing. I've spent a bunch of Bitcoin over the past few months doing
and have more than donations. You started with, right?
Yeah. I spend Bitcoin. I have more a week later than I had before I spent it. So yeah, and it's awesome. But anyway. If you have like a Mycelium wallet, the smart thing to do, and I don't know how the other ones are, but you back up your wallet. So if my phone were to just absolutely go down for the dirt nap, or if I were to lose my phone, I would be able to get back into my wallet and recover my funds. And
I can testify that it's very easy to bring Mycelium back up again if you lose your phone or something. I've been through that. It works great.
Yeah, but the important thing to do is to, do your 12 words that you have for your authentication, do your PIN number, write that down on paper, put it in a safe or someplace where you don't have to worry about getting destroyed or lost, and make sure that you have that. I can't even count how many times people have talked about, I lost my Bitcoin because of this or that or the other thing. Heck, Michael even lost a couple Bitcoin a few years ago. I think this may have been like early radio days. No, Bitcoin was worth like 50, 60 bucks at the time, so it wasn't that big of a deal. But he couldn't remember his password to get into his wallet, and eventually, after losing sleep and torturing himself, he just deleted the wallet and said, all right, I'm done with it. I have to wash my hands. So, all right,
Be back after this.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
I love the Freedom Fiends, but in this modern busy world, I just don't have time to listen all the way through every episode.
There is a solution. Go to the World Wide Web and log on to digest.freedomfiends.com and subscribe to the Freedom Fiends Digest. Digest.freedomfiends.com has 20-minute best-ofs of each episode.
20-minute best-ofs? Digest.freedomfiends.com sounds great. How much does it cost?
That's the best part. It's free. And if you listen at 1.5 speed, they're only 13 minutes long. Plus, the episodes are only about 15 megs, which is great, because I have a limited data plan.
Wow. I'm at digest.freedomfiends.com right now. It's so simple to use. And anyone who doesn't have 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends is a big old statist.
I agree with you about people who can't find 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends Digest. That's digest.freedomfiends.com.
I didn't realize I was kicking Phil off.
We're back.
We're kicking Phil off. Right. We are back, so... There's got to be something to talk about. We talked about the blockchain. There's Randy's mating call. So, all right, we talked about how the blockchain is going to save the world and all that other stuff. And Bitcoin keeps dying. It's dying at an all-time high right now. So, do you got anything else that you want to talk about with the fest and finally getting a chance to meet liberty-minded folks in real life for the first time and find out that they're not actually just part of your delusional imagination?
Well, yeah. I would say if there's any listeners out there that are within driving or even perhaps flying distance to the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, it's going to be in Michigan, June 22nd to the 26th, I recommend that they go because it's a really good experience. I've been to a lot of other, like, gatherings and festivals before, but the quality of conversations I think that were to be had were just on another level. So I really recommend that anyone who's listening, if you're on the fence about going, just go. Even if you're a minarchist, you know, it doesn't matter. We'll come that. And we'll fix that. Yeah.
Hey, and one thing also, Lou, I think we're probably past the time for any kind of early bird discount, but isn't there also a discount if you pay in Bitcoin?
Yes, there's a discount for Bitcoin. And yeah,
I got that one.
Yeah, what's really nice is if you've been hodling your Bitcoin, that's a kind of an insider term there. If you've been hodling your Bitcoin for a while and watched it grow, yeah, you'll definitely get a lot of bang for your buck. You get a lot of bang for your bit.
Well, that's exactly why I like to keep a few, you know, I don't mean a few bitcoins, but some bitcoin. Would that be the right yeah. usage there? Because, you can do better with Bitcoin in different places, and particularly Liberty people are very encouraging of using Bitcoin, and so you can often get a deal, and this is one place where you can get a nice cut on the registration, and that fee includes the camping and stuff too. It's not just for the ticket, it's for the whole weekend. So
yeah,
I actually used Bitcoin to buy bacon from Lou.
Yes. Yes, I will be accepting Bitcoin at the Assault Kitchen for breakfast this year.
Yeah, although it's pretty cheap considering, you know, one fee is for the event and for all the camping. It's a best deal that weekend, that's for sure.
Yeah, oh, and there's an extra definitely. Day this year.
Oh, yes, yeah, extra day.
So what all did you do last year, Shane? I know you did more than just like sit outside your tent and watch the wind blow.
Oh, really? That's the thing. I didn't realize that the schedule of the talks was going to be so complex, because I would want to like just see some talk that was scheduled, but then I'd also want to be back at the camp hanging out with people. And so I was back and forth between the pavilion and the camp constantly wanting to see the talks and hang out at the fire and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, I was really impressed by the level of professionalism that they had going on at the pavilion there. I mean, there was podcasts being done and everything right there from the pavilion. I think they did an Anarchy Roundtable, it was really the quality of the information that I got was unexpected, I guess.
Yeah, and last year, probably the big name speaker was friend of the Fiends, Prof. CJ.
Yep,
and I love his podcast. I
love his podcast too.
And he just played the commercial for the fest and gave us an absolute glowing endorsement. He doesn't look like he's going to be able to make it up there this year, which is a bummer.
That's a disappointment.
Yeah. But he had really great things to say about the fest and recommends that you get there. So
I really, if you don't know Prof. CJ and the Dangerous History podcast, check that out. He gave a really, really good talk. Was it more than one? The one I heard was really good. I can't remember.
I did the one, I think.
But I get confused because
on the Anarchy Roundtable.
Yeah, he was. Yes, he was. Too.
And of course, when he wasn't there, he was out sitting at the picnic table shooting the baloney with everybody through the whole thing. So, very interesting guy.
All right, we'll be back after this trip to the market.
Yeah, second hour, we're going to drop some mad scientists out of a B-52 and carpet bomb you with knowledge. Worms.
Sounds good. We'll be right back.
Ever struggle for the right thing to say at a party? Want something to break the ice? Get the free Freedom Fiends Android app, Pocket Alibi. Pocket Alibi will help you have things to say. It'll replace verbal communication when you're not speaking with somebody.
I value your input.
It'll make you the hit of any party.
Not my circus, not my monkeys.
Will it work?
Not a guarantee.
It's a great icebreaker, too. Comes loaded with hundreds of original funny sayings with great voices and great recording quality. It's arranged into 7 categories. Disclaimers.
You should never do the thing I'm talking about.
Excuses.
I'm sorry, sir. An older girl told me to do it.
Advice. Fun, too.
Get off me, kitty.
Libertarian pickup lines.
Hey, baby, hold my camera while I yell at this meter maid.
State speech is hate speech.
Bark, bark for the state.
Get Pocket Alibi today on Google Play for free. Again, search for Pocket Alibi. That's Pocket Alibi, A-L-I-B-I.
Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi.
Does this app make me look fat?
And we're back.
The volume. Yeah.
Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends. Broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Bees Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region.
Preach,
brother. As always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. To learn more about this, go to BIPCOT.org.
Testify.
Amen. And worms.
Can I get an amen?
You got one. Okay. And that was Shade in his first introduction to the Freedom Second. Fiends.
He did last.
Oh, was there another one?
Introduction too. Yeah.
It was my first, and it was very well done.
I was on a couple nights ago, and Michael had me do the first hour and the second hour. And I flubbed a little bit on the second hour, but I got it this time.
All right.
Don't worry about it. I flub it every single time.
Yeah. Strip a microphone and put it back together.
Yep, without even disconnecting.
Blindfolded.
All right. Yeah, blindfolded. Yeah, you have to put that windscreen back on there properly. So
yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Drop the magazine, make sure that the chamber's empty, and change the windscreen on there.
No, you'd be so, popping anyway. Your peas all over the place.
Yeah, plosives. So anyway, we are back. It's the second hour. We're going to do a little bit of knowledge bombing here. And Phil and I and whatever other host was on Wednesday nights, we'd been talking a bit about the myth of the robber barons. The folks that are labeled as robber barons, but their biggest crime is being successful in a situation where they weren't supposed to be. And we're going to do that in a little bit, but I came up with something that I've talked about this a couple times on the show before, but it's always good to repeat it. It's kind of a foundational type thing that should be covered here. And not to mention, people just forget it all the darn time, so they need a reminder. But anyway, what we're going to talk about in you guys saw the article they sent you on the Fuhrer Principle, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. In German, it's pronounced Fuhrer Prinzip. So the Fuhrer Principle, or Fuhrer Prinzip, German for leader principle. So Fuhrer doesn't mean anything, doesn't mean Nazi, it means leader. So it wasn't even created for Hitler. They just called him the leader, and it really stuck with him. But anyway, the Fuhrer Prinzip, German for leader principle, prescribed the fundamental basis of political authority in the government structures of the Third Reich. This principle is most succinctly understood to mean that the Fuhrer's word is above all written law. So, kind of like most American politicians see themselves, that they can just declare something and that will supersede everything else that even existed, and you're supposed to know that it supersedes and just ignore the old stuff because they said it. But anyway,
so you're saying it's very good to be the Fuhrer then, because your word is law. Well, in the end, it depends on which Fuhrer you are and how much fun you had along the way. I mean, nobody lives forever, right?
Yeah, but it all depends on how you want to die. If you want to be in a bunker with a gun in your mouth, that might be a thing to do. But anyway,
well, that's not the way that Mussolini went.
No, did he get hung in the street?
They hung him upside down and abused his body until it was long dead.
Yeah, because didn't they cut his belly open for the pigeons to feed on?
I think it was pretty bad. The only guy I've heard of that got it even worse than that would have been Muammar Gaddafi. He had a rough one after they killed him.
Well, Ceausescu in Romania, I think.
Oh, yeah, that was a colorful one too. Yes.
Yeah. And don't forget Julius Caesar.
Oh, that was tough.
Whenever I hear "render unto Caesar what belongs to Caesar," I imagine Julius bleeding out in the street. But anyway. So anyway, the Fuhrer's word is above all written law, and that government policies, decisions, and offices ought to work toward the realization of this end. In actual political usage, it refers mainly to practice of dictatorship within the ranks of a political party, and as such has become an earmark of political fascism. The Fuhrer Prinzip was not invented by the Nazis, as I mentioned. Hermann Graf Kaiserling, an ethnically German philosopher from Estonia, was the first to use the term Fuhrer Prinzip. One of Kaiserling's central claims was that certain gifted individuals were born to rule on the basis of social Darwinism. And if you guys have ever heard our friend Ben Stone, the bad Quaker, talk about the theory of the great man, or the myth of the great man, or as I call it, the great man fallacy, is the great man is a belief that there are these people out there, and just like it talks about here, they're gifted individuals and they were born to do these things. And granted, some of these people, you know, you take Ludwig von Mises, probably the most brilliant economist of all time, if not the most, he's definitely up there. And he is a man of accomplishment, but the thing to remember is he's still only human.
Yep.
He's a man. He makes mistakes. Ron Paul is a man. He makes mistakes. Murray Rothbard was a man, and he makes mistakes. And to ascribe this great man status, this Fuhrer Prinzip to these folks is no different than the people that worship Obama and Trump. And quite frankly, those two groups are indistinguishable from each other.
And both of those figures qualified, probably more than any other American political figures in quite a long time, Obama and Trump as being the great man, the leader, the man on the horse, you know, save us.
Especially with their usage of executive orders.
Yeah.
It fits right in with the concept of Fuhrer Prinzip.
Yeah. So anyway, back to this. The ideology of the Fuhrer Prinzip sees each organization as a hierarchy of leaders, where every leader, Fuhrer in German, has absolute responsibility in his own area, demands absolute obedience from those below him, and answers only to his superiors. Huh, that sounds familiar. This required obedience and loyalty even over concerns of right and wrong. Ooh, just following orders. The supreme leader, Adolf Hitler, answered to God and the German people. Italian philosopher Giorgio Agamben, has argued that Hitler saw himself as an incarnation of Latin word. mostly it's my vision here that I'm having.
Luke, let me break in a moment and excuse Lou on the non-German words, but I'm sure often frequent listeners have realized that whenever there's anything that has German words in it, Lou's the one that gets to read it because he's been to Germany. But when it comes to Italian and Latin, he's just a man like the rest of us.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm the great man when it comes to some German, but I'm just a mere mortal when it comes to the other stuff. So anyway, Auctoritas and the living law or highest law itself, especially combining in his persona executive power, judicial power, and legislative power. After the campaign against the alleged Rumputsch, Hitler declared, "In this hour, I was responsible for the fate of the German nation and was therefore the supreme judge of the German people."
Was that when the brown shirts tried to work? He was. They tried to take over the Nazism, and he put them down.
You know what? I would really have to take a look at that. I don't really recall all the details on that. But the key point to the Fuhrerprinzip, and I'm not going to go into the rest of it because we still have a lot of stuff to cover for the rest of the show tonight. The big thing about the Fuhrerprinzip is the belief that Hitler was Germany. Germany was Hitler. Without Hitler, there is no Germany. And I can't count how many of these people that I'm seeing, they're doing this worshiping of Trump in the same way, or the people that worshipped Obama. The whole reason that there's sunshine in America is because Barack Obama occupied the White House. It was as if there was 1,000 years of darkness prior to his regime taking charge. And quite frankly, nothing's changed between the two. Donald Trump is Obama's third term, and George W. Bush is either third or fifth, depends upon how you want to look at it. Because Obama was Bush's third and fourth term. So this is all pretty much George Washington's like 92nd term or something like that. I don't know exactly, but anyway. So yeah, this whole notion. And then the other thing that I really got to hit on is I actually saw this on social media recently. Somebody was talking about how the Liberty Movement collapsed without Ron Paul. Ron Paul was the Liberty Movement. No. The Liberty Movement is the Liberty Movement. The Ron Paul Movement is the Ron Paul Movement. Learn the difference between the two. Because Ron Paul, once again, is just a man. He is not a god.
Worms.
Yeah, worms. He may be exceptional, but he's still just a man. And he does stupid stuff, too, like the people that he hires. You know, like his campaign managers or the people that write his newsletter on his behalf. You know, poor management skills. So, anything you guys want to add on that? We have about 45 seconds before we go to break.
Nope. I mean, no. The only thing things like Ron Paul and that. I really appreciate, what the guy did and that sort of thing. But you're absolutely right. There's nobody going to, save us in such a way. And right. And Donald Trump is not going to, and the guy after him is not going to either. And if you really get a big enough thing going, you might be unlucky enough. You end up with another Hitler.
Yeah. We have to be our own role models.
Yeah. You know what? There's a Prof. CJ podcast. I've used this quite a few times with my patients. The title of it is called Save Yourself, and he goes through some historical examples of people that had to step up and take care of themselves, otherwise they would have perished. And one of the quotes was Frederick Douglass. He says, I prayed for 20 years until I prayed, and I got no answer until I prayed with my own 2 feet.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
I think it's pretty cool. Oh, yeah. And we are back.
Yep.
So, yeah, Shane, you had something that you wanted to announce and take this entire segment to talk about?
Yeah, I guess we could take this segment to talk about the Conscious Resistance Network's Decentralize Your Life Tour, which Derek Brose and John Vibes, is based on their book, The Manifesto of the Free Humans, which came out in April, I believe. And it's all about how to put agorist principles into practice. And it's about localizing the networks of action with what they call freedom cells. And so they're going to be doing a tour this summer, and I'm going to be helping them on their Cincinnati leg of that tour. I guess during the day, we're going to do something called an action day, where there's like community outreach of some sort, whether it's feeding the homeless or planting community gardens. And then at night, they're going to give speeches, and there's even going to be a performance. I think Jack or Johnny Sparrow, he's coming, and he's bringing you know, music and stuff. So it's going to be a really fun time to be had all around.
Nice. Keep and, talking.
Okay. So
Randy, jump in, ask him a question.
Well, I was going to point out the Manifesto of the Free Humans, that's available on Amazon, right?
It is available on Amazon.
And I haven't heard about it before. You just told me about it. But this looks kind of... What do you understand that this movement is about, or this manifesto?
Well, it's based on agorism, which is a word that was coined by Samuel Edward Konkin. And I guess for the radio listeners out there who aren't familiar with agorism, it's basically a way of taking counter-economics and like civil disobedience and non-compliance and putting it into action in a way that undermines the state in like a kind of a counter-economic fashion. And Samuel Edward Konkin wrote the New Libertarian Manifesto in 1980, I believe. And he not only coined the word agorism, but he also laid out a lot of the principles of agorism for counter-economics and so forth. And it's those principles that they're going to be putting into practice this summer in their Decentralize Your Life tour. And I don't know a whole lot about it and what we're going to be, actually the specifics of what we're going to be doing here on our part of the tour. But I'm looking forward to taking part in it, and I'm looking forward to meeting Derek Bros. And I was hoping to meet John Vibes, but he's probably not going to be coming on the tour because he's going to be taking some time off to recuperate and take care of his health.
You may be meeting him on the radio. Is that possible?
That's actually possible. If he comes on anytime soon, I would love to do a show with him because then we could expand on this topic that I brought up just now, because I'm sure that, you know, being the co-author of the book, he's got a lot to say about it.
Looking at the Amazon page, there's the explanation or the little blurb about what the book is about is actually written by Jeffrey Tucker, and says that it elaborates on the agorism, well, the 19th century anarchists, and elaborated by Samuel Konkin and Carl Hess. I don't know how many folks are familiar with him, but he had to be one of the most fascinating characters of the 60s and 70s, that went from being the uber conservative speechwriter for Barry Goldwater to being what was the name of the article? Was it the death of government? Lou, do you recall the article in Playboy magazine back in 1970? You can get that article and read that. What a fantastic piece of work Carl Hess wrote. And I don't know, you can see him on the internet. He's really kind of a delightful guy that's fun to listen to, and just the talks that he gave in that. I won't go on, but look up Carl Hess. Really an amazing guy.
Yeah, I'm already a fan of Carl Hess.
Yeah. And like I said, I now that I see this book, I think I'm going to have it. It's not available in a Kindle yet.
There is a downloadable version.
Yeah, I don't want to have to take off one star just because I can't get a Kindle version, you know. I'd hate for a 5-star review to go down to 4 just because I can't get what I want.
Well, we can't have that.
No, we can't. But anyway, I've got to check it out. Yes, I do. Manifesto of the Free Humans. And what was the name of this traveling...
It's called the Decentralize Your Life Tour by the Conscious Resistance Network.
Okay, got to check that out too then. I hope it's not the same weekend as the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest.
Oh, no, well, there might be a little bit of overlap tour dates.
Sure. They should arrange to have their tour pass through Delta, Michigan during the fest.
They should. That would be neat.
I wonder if that could be arranged.
I don't know.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Thank you for being a fiend. You may know the show is Triggerweens. We're saying worms and your new bigger buttons on. And if you threw a party and invited every yak you knew, you would see we'd still follow the NAP, and we're covered by Bipcot. Thank you for being a fiend.
Yeah, Freedom Fiends.
Worms.
So, all right, it's time to go back and take a stroll through history again. And as I mentioned before, Phil and I have talked about this a couple of times. And the article that we're going to go from is called "The Truth About the Robber Barons." It's by Thomas J. DiLorenzo. Was it God, what's his name? Burton Folsom wrote a book called "The Myth of the Robber Barons," and DiLorenzo had written a book, "How Capitalism Saved America," and so I want to go back and provide a little background. Once again, you may have heard this before if you listen to the show on a regular basis. There's two types of ways to make your money. You can either be a market entrepreneur or you can be a political entrepreneur. The market entrepreneur makes their money by providing goods and services, satisfying customers, and people voluntarily choose to spend their money on those goods and services. The political entrepreneur, on the other hand, uses political connections to crush competition and mandate that their product be bought. They also lobby for subsidies so that they don't have to actually earn their keep and, you know, compete against the other providers as strongly. So the choices are work or robbery. Market entrepreneur, political entrepreneur.
Go ahead, political entrepreneur is almost an oxymoron. It,
right, exactly.
It's a violence against the word entrepreneur, which I have a positive connotation for in my mind. These people are just, they're crooks. Not exactly crooks. They go to the government and see if the government will give them, you know, favors. Obviously, the government are the crooks because they're going to rob somebody else to help their buddies, and that's the political entrepreneurs you're talking about, right?
Yeah, the politicians and the politically connected cronies are the real robber barons. The people that history has told us to hate because they became wealthy by providing goods and services and satisfying their customers, you know, those are the people that have been labeled the robber barons. But I, quite frankly, if you're successful and you're good at doing something, there's absolutely no reason why I should hate you. So today we're going to talk about Cornelius Vanderbilt, and he was a steamship guy. So as the article talks about, the battle between market and political entrepreneurs was not confined to the railroad and oil industries. Previous episodes we had spoken about John D. Rockefeller and James J. Hill, who created the Great Northern Railroad. And one thing that I wanted to really express here, just as a constitution cannot grant politicians capability to do things properly, political favors will not grant the capability for political entrepreneurs to do their job successfully. So, anyway, indeed, from the 19th century onward, this sort of battle marked the development of much of American industry. Oh, back in the free, unregulated market, as the cartoon version of history tells us. The steamship industry, the steel industry, and the auto industry, to name just a few. For example, the great steamship entrepreneur Cornelius Vanderbilt competed with government-subsidized political entrepreneurs for much of his career. In fact, he got his start in business by competing illegally against a state-sanctioned steamship monopoly operated by Robert Fulton.
Oh, the inventor of the steamship? Isn't that what Fulton was? Yeah. I remember that from school.
Yeah, but the key point is he had a government granted monopoly. Hey, isn't government supposed to prevent monopolies, you know, to promote competition and everything else?
Exactly.
Yeah, interestingly enough, you hear about the trust busting and the Sherman Antitrust Act and all this stuff to eliminate cartels and monopolies. And what it really did was it cartelized these different industries with the politically connected. So I don't know what it is, but every time the politicians say that they're going to do something to protect the consumer, the consumer may as well just reach down and grab their ankles because the opposite's going to happen. Every single time that they've tried to promote competition, there's one up with less competition. Every time they've tried to bust the cartels and the monopolies, they strengthened them. But anyway, so he was illegally competing against Robert Fulton. In 1807, the New York State Legislature had granted Fulton a legal 30-year monopoly on steamboat traffic in New York, a classic example of mercantilism. Mercantilism would be an early version of economic fascism, the marriage of corporation and state. It's essentially, in many cases, it is a planned economy. It does fall in the socialism family. But it's just very protectionist. So in 1817, a young Cornelius Vanderbilt was hired by New Jersey businessman Thomas Gibbons to defy the monopoly and run steamboats in New York. Vanderbilt worked in direct competition with Fulton, charging lower rates as his boats raced from Elizabeth, New Jersey to New York City. To underscore the challenge to Fulton's monopoly, Vanderbilt flew a flag on his boats that read, "New Jersey must be free." Slowly, he was breaking down the Fulton monopoly, which the U.S. Supreme Court finally ended in 1824, ruling in Gibbons versus Ogden that only the federal government, not the states, could regulate interstate trade under the Commerce Clause of the Constitution, meaning only the federal government could grant a government-granted monopoly.
I wonder, anyway. Did Fulton ever try to get this guy arrested or something? This is gutsy. You wouldn't get away with this today.
It was darn near comical because I've read other accounts of it and listened to Tom Woods talk about it. Vanderbilt. A lot of times he was, you know, kind of like the moonshiners, the Dukes of Hazzard, trying to stay away from Sheriff Roscoe P. Coltrane and trying to keep from getting busted. But what was really interesting is when you do a comparison between Cornelius Vanderbilt and James J. Hill, they were lowering their prices. They were charging less than the subsidized competition was. And the question has to be, well, how could they do that? If the competition is being subsidized, can't they just charge less? The thing about a political entrepreneur is the reason that they're political entrepreneurs and not market entrepreneurs is because they're not capable of being market entrepreneurs. If you look at the people that were running the steamship industries, and particularly the railroad industries, these people had no business running these companies. They had no business being in that industry. And they should have been like selling suits and dresses at a tailor shop in Boston. They should have been stitching up hems and stuff like that.
Yeah, they were paid by the mile, by the mile to lay track, and when they were on nice open ground, why they'd be as crooked as a dog's hind leg, you know, to add extra miles over easy ground.
Yeah. Yeah. And they got paid extra to for steeper grades, so they didn't miss a hill. They got paid extra for building in wetlands, so they didn't miss a swamp either. But in comparison, Hill, because he had to pay for the stuff out of his own pocket, he did it right the first time because he couldn't get subsidies to rebuild the track in the spring after doing a shoddy job and have it fall apart in the wintertime. No, he had to actually take care of himself. He wasn't a parasitic welfare whore.
Of course, Vanderbilt might have had a little easier go of it because you're saying, he wasn't fighting a subsidy. The only subsidy he was fighting was a state enforced monopoly. So
no, he was fighting against subsidies too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. But here's the thing. Just like Hill, just like Rockefeller, he was so efficient at his operations that he was able to charge less than the subsidized competition. He was better at doing the job. And it got to a point to where, as he was going back and forth from New Jersey to New York, his rates were dropping and dropping and dropping. And finally, it got to a point to where he was even charging a fare. He was making his money off of selling concessions on the ships. Wow. So you could go from New Jersey to New York City and back, buy a couple hot dogs or something like that, and that's what covers the cost of transportation.
So he created a natural monopoly for himself by the captive audience on his ship.
Yeah. Well, and there's no actual incidents of natural monopoly. What you have is somebody who's really good at what he does and able to crush the weaker competition that deserves to be crushed.
So, well, it was a good monopoly.
Yeah. But it still wasn't a monopoly, though.
On the ship, it was, you know, for lunch that day.
Yeah.
Unless you brought a hot dog, you know. Yeah. Go ahead, Lou. I'm sorry. Go on.
Yeah. Stop it. Stop it.
I will.
As the cost of steamboat traffic plummeted because of deregulation, the volume of traffic increased significantly and the industry took off. Vanderbilt became the leading market entrepreneur in the industry, but he would continue to face government-subsidized competitors. For example, steamship operator Edward K. Collins convinced Congress that it needed to subsidize the transatlantic steamship business to compete with the Europeans and to create a military fleet in case of war.
That's what they always say.
Yeah. In 1847, Congress awarded Collins $3 million plus $385,000 per year. Sitting on these fat subsidies, Collins had little incentive to build his ships efficiently or to watch his costs once they were built. Instead of focusing on making his business more efficient, Collins spent lavishly on lobbying, including whining and dining President Millard Fillmore, his entire cabinet, and many congressmen. Now, when Congress gives these subsidies to these particular industries, they may as well just call it a 401k for themselves, because a lot of that money that they give in subsidy is going to come right back to them in political donations and graft. So,
and wine and food, too.
Yeah, but and it's not listed in this article here, but or maybe no, it wasn't. So anyway, Vanderbilt wound up hauling, getting the contract to haul mail back and forth from Europe to the U.S. And it got to a point where he was doing these things so efficiently that he was barely charging anything for it. As a matter of fact, it may have gotten to where he was hauling the mail at no cost.
Worms.
Yay. We'll be back. Cornelius Vanderbilt.
Yes.
This day in history. Freedom Fiends.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. Cell 411 because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at GetCell411.com. That's GetCell411.com.
Freedom Fiends.
We are back. Yeah, we're back. Freedom Fiends.
Lou and Shane and Randy, that's me. And we're still working on the robber barons, aren't we, Lou?
Yeah. Like James J. Hill in the railroad industry, Vanderbilt did not shy away from competing against his heavily subsidized rivals. Not only these government-supported rivals ultimately could not keep up with Vanderbilt, in large part because of the stifling regulations that were inevitably attached to the government subsidies, made these steamship lines remarkably inefficient. And by 1858, Collins's line had become so inefficient that Congress ended his subsidy, and he promptly went bankrupt. He could not compete with Vanderbilt on an equal basis. I always hear this stuff about monopoly and, you know, one company is going to take over. And you guys have seen the movie Demolition Man, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. In that movie, the trade wars between the fast food restaurants happens, and the last fast food standing, the fast food standing is Taco Bell. So the question is, because I mean, people were just like, oh, okay, Taco Bell won. Okay, what would have to happen for a company to eliminate all the competition and prevent new competition from entering the market as the other competition is dying? So, quite simply, what would a company have to do to please their customers and to please their competition's customers enough to leave the competition and come to them? What would have to happen? How good would they have to be to do this? Because when it comes to pleasing customers, it's more than just having a high quality or a good price. It's more than just the value. I mean, there's so many different subjective things that consumers will look at. They may want to deal with somebody that's local. They may want to be able to do it online. They may want a company that gives X amount to different social organizations and is charitable and has a presence in the community as far as like these different social things. So there's all these different things that have to be satisfied to get customers to come on board. Now, quite frankly, if one company was so successful, if they were so brilliant and they could consistently do this and consistently please their customers, why should I hate these companies? And furthermore, if they are that successful, why should they be broken up?
Well, obviously, they shouldn't be broken up. Of course, nobody can please everybody, but every market has a leader in it somewhere. The biggest fish, and that's the person who is pleasing the most people. And it's kind of sick that the government is quick to come in and punish the person who's doing the most good. But they do that all the time.
What's even sicker than that is the consumer that wants the provider that does it best to be punished. I mean, that's a conspiracy against yourself. So, Randy, you had some historical information on the real meaning of the word robber barons. Go.
Well, yeah, it's annoying. It's annoying. They talk about these. First of all, they try to say that Hill and Vanderbilt and John D. Rockefeller were the robber barons. And, of course, they weren't even, from our point of view, the real robber barons. The real robbers back in that era were the people taking the government subsidies, the Union Pacific and Central Pacific Railroad thing. Those are all being paid with, built with government money, and who knows who else, you know. Those guys were the bad guys from American history. But the thing that kind of annoys me is that none of these guys are the real robber barons. But back in the Middle Ages or the medieval times, the Holy Roman Empire, the way that they kind of collect taxes is they let their lords, like their barons and even their knights, collect money, you know, on toll roads or people going through the place at the river, toll rivers, I guess they had. I don't know. But the government only allowed them to take so much, a reasonable amount, of course, and that's how they got their taxes. And the robber barons were the guys that took too much. And they took everything and were basically robbing travelers and merchants and that sort of thing. And those were the robber barons, the real robber barons and the robber knights. And they kind of, yellow journalists back at the turn of the century, kind of adopted that to tar John D. Rockefeller and Vanderbilt and that. The real heroes of that age, in my book. And I think we're about out of time on the Freedom Fiends, Lou and Shane.
Worms.
Yes. So quite possibly the next time I talk to you, Randy, might be in person at the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, June 26th.
Well, I don't know. I'm going to try and get... I want to get back on and finish this, though. So,
all right, well, get back on and finish it, then.
Catch it.
All right, thanks for coming on tonight, guys. Thanks, everybody,
hey,
for
listening. Hey, thank you, guys.
For more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com.
Or...